This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 20th. I'm John Gibson, and back with me early on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen, off of his working vacation. How you doing, man?
I am working.
You're working on it.
I'm working on not being on vacation. And it's a bit of a chore, let me tell you.
I'm going to set up a vacation school, teach people how to rest, and you're going to be my number one student, my main student, the first one.
I rest. I tried not to work.
And I tried not to work.
I was really good at it. I mean, I did have some studying I did, but not a lot. It was basically every morning do the yoga, go to the gym, walk, swim, see friends,
whatever,
rinse, repeat.
Then whatever, dude. The first issue is admitting you have a problem. The statement "I tried to rest" says it all. But anyway, how you doing? How you doing today?
It's early, and I'm really good with the jet lag, but last night I got on my train and I forgot that the weekend rapid train doesn't stop at my station, and I forgot to get off where I needed to change, and I ended up getting home a half hour later, which messed up my sleep schedule further. So long story short, I'm not quite where I think I am. How about you, man?
I'm fine, but you know, late at night when the trains stop running, I keep hearing this huge sucking noise coming from the direction of Seibu Dome. Luckily, I'm too tired for it to bother me, but I can hear it.
Wow. Wow. It's only like, what, about 12 miles away?
About that, and yet I can still hear it, and it's disturbing, but like I said, I'm too tired for it to keep me awake at night.
Wow. Speaking of sucking noises, I had an interesting conversation. Well, it wasn't. I was in full-on complain mode Friday. And
someone would say what's new, but go ahead.
Indeed. Yeah, that's I think I left that remark in my wake. I was really adamant. I think I'm going to wear a shirt that said Japanese baseball is disrespecting reporters, you know, like a vest or something, or on a t-shirt. You know, if they're not going to let us on the ground, I'm just going to wear a t-shirt to the
park. T-shirt and a cap, yes, matching.
Yeah,
cap, yes, yeah,
exactly. And so I was talking to Masao Kida, and I mentioned the comment about Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the fighters, the key addition this season being the Tsuyoshi Shinjo mute button, and he kind of tried to smile. like, oh yeah. So people like notice that or something.
Well, that's good. But yeah,
he's the assistant. He's an assistant to the general manager, which is kind of what he's been doing for the last 5 years, and which is making his hair turn gray like crazy.
I can only imagine. Well, all right, well, let's get to this week's show. We've got Andres Machado of Oryx. We've got Adam Walker of SoftBank. We go rocking with Roki. Look at the standings. Look at Munetaka Murakami and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, so in March, I was... you know, back in ballparks and such, and one day in Chiba, in the aforementioned Chiba wasteland, that I went to a Hawks game, and I managed to actually talk to a few Hawks players. You know, I shouted at them, "Come over here close where I could talk to you," instead of where the reporters are. And I managed to fool Yuki Inagita and Kenta Imamiya and Adam Walker into coming over and talking to me. So I was really interested to talk to Adam Walker, and we had never even met before because he was here during the pandemic and so on. So that was really interesting. And then another day, and I believe it was at Cebu, I got a chance to talk to Andres Machado. And actually, that was after the season started. That was, in fact, the Cebu Lions home opener.
Mm, okay.
And that was interesting because I'd heard his first, he had already done a hero interview. And say, so basically, what you're going to hear in the here in the interview is a distillation of his hero interview. I think he's pretty much got one plan. at least he's got one public plan in English, and I don't want to disparage people speaking sure. it in their not in their native language, because my Spanish is borders on non-existent.
Okay.
So I'm trying to rectify, but I'm not doing a very good job of it. So let's have a listen to these guys and learn a little bit.
Tell me, so first of all, yeah, nice debut in Japan.
Oh yeah, I feel great, you know. Excited to get that debut. Uh-huh. Was better than I was thought.
Yeah.
So now we are ready to be to win. I have the team to win.
Yeah, this is a good team. Yeah. I mean, obviously you come into a good situation. This yeah. team won 3 straight championships.
Yeah.
What kind of team is it?
You know, so when I get here and I saw this team, it's got a good like connection. Like they are very like the championship team, very together, so good communication, everybody love each other. So I think when I get here, that's the first impression was okay. amazing.
Everyone was a little surprised you hit 101 miles an hour on the radar gun.
Yeah, you know, I'm being safe, so I just come here to get quick out. If the bill are coming out like that hard, it'd be good for me and the team. But I think the first thing is be healthy all season and help the team to win.
You obviously, I guess when I heard you say that on TV, I'm thinking, okay, just throw strikes and...
Yeah, throw strikes. Like, go in there, get batters quick with 3 pitch or less. It's better for me because I can be ready for the next day.
All right. Now, how was your experience in the preseason with the team? And obviously, there's a few things you've never done before.
Yeah, so... What I say is amazing. So I thank God with the team. They give me the opportunity. So to be in a new culture, so it's good for me.
Have you played? You played in the States.
Yeah.
So you've been to foreign country. You played in foreign countries before. So it's not so new.
Yeah, it's not. That's what I say. It's not new for me. Like being a new country, so a new culture. I think we are ready for the situation. So what I've been saying, I like Japan.
Okay.
So far I like everything, the food, teammates, people, like the culture, like how they respect each other. So mm-hmm. I love that.
That is a big thing about Japanese culture.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, you know, there's a feeling about, they teach people, you know, you don't bother other people. You know, that's kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So they try to teach us how to speak Japanese. So
okay, what have you learned in Japanese?
You know, I got just the main, like, arigato, onigashimasu, like, ohayo, konnichiwa.
My mom was in Japan about 20 times, and that's about as far as she ever got. So you're way ahead.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. So I try to learn quick that I can.
Okay, well, anyway, it's a pleasure to meet you, and good luck going forward. Stay healthy.
Nice to meet you.
And we'll see you later in the summer.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is a new SoftBank Hawk, but Japan baseball veteran Adam Walker. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Tell us about your transition to the Hawks.
Yeah, so I guess this offseason, I got a call during the middle of my workout, and I looked, and I was like, you know, got a phone call. They said, hey, someone's calling you. I said, let me see the phone, just in case.
Okay.
And it turns out to be the Giants, and... Yeah, they just called me, kind of got straight to the point, let me know that I was traded, but, you know, just thanked me for everything, and, you know, they were very polite about it. It was a good transaction, but, yeah, this offseason got the news, and just continue to keep working out, and now we're here.
Okay. Yeah, the trades are fairly uncommon for imports.
Yeah.
You obviously don't expect it when
yeah.
you sign a contract that... How's your reception been in SoftBank? Obviously, they wanted you.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, they wanted me with the trade. But it's been great. I mean, everybody's been super nice, super welcoming. It seems like a great organization. I've heard great things. So far it's been really good. I'm excited to be here and just ready for the year.
Okay. So what are your, obviously you've played the Pacific League teams before, mm-hmm. and Interleague. What has your impression been of has there been any difference between maybe the pitching in the Pacific League and the Central League?
Overall, I think it seems like they throw a little harder. They like to throw their fastball more and attack the zone more. We only get 3 games versus a team during Interleague.
Sure.
So it's only been a couple games, but I guess that's kind of been the thing I've seen. It seems like they attack with the fastball. They try to come after hitters. So we'll see this year as the year goes along, but that's what I've seen so far.
Okay, now in the Pacific League, you get a lot more at-bats against some of these PL pitchers. Mm-hmm. Any guys you are really kind of intrigued about facing, or you're really eager to learn more about, figure you can get them?
I mean, there's a lot of great arms. It's tough. I don't really know everybody because we rarely get to see them. So I don't know if there's really necessarily one or two guys. It's kind of everybody. Just excited to start seeing, like, you know, new arms and new people play against different people. It's play the Central League so much and you see the same guys. So it's kind of refreshing to get new looks at people.
Okay, so this year is really a new start in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. Just a new start. Just new team, new competition. It's just kind of new everything.
Okay, now, I mean, when you go into your, when you're with the Giants and when you're starting your offseason with the Giants, you know, oh, I'm going to be with the Giants. And of course, every year is a new challenge and I got to learn stuff from what I didn't do or adjustments I didn't make. When you're playing for a new team, does that put a little spring in your workouts or a little more, I don't know, make you look at it a little differently?
A little bit, but I mean, I try to stay pretty hungry. Whether I was playing for the Giants or the Hawks, like, you have to come into the year and compete and be ready to go. So it didn't really change a whole lot. It was just kind of just a new start mentally, refresh mentally. But physically, you do all the same work and try to get prepared the same way.
Okay, obviously they didn't have a lot of power last year. They basically had a two-man offense with Inagita. And partly that was a lot of guys having kind of mediocre years. Mm-hmm. But especially Kurihara, if he's healthy, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
And maybe you guys will have a 4-man offense. Or, what's your personal goal? Obviously, I'm not talking about, you know, I want to hit so many home runs, but what do you want to accomplish this year as a player that maybe you were unsatisfied with the last year?
I think the biggest thing is just I want to establish myself as an everyday player.
Sure.
I believe in myself. I have to show it. You have to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the biggest thing. You could talk about all the numbers and stuff, but if you don't play every day, the numbers aren't going to be there.
Right.
I feel like if you do play every day, that means you're doing well, and then the numbers will be there. So I try not to worry about it too much. But just really just the consistency, and I want to prove that I can go out there every day and be in the lineup.
So what do you need to do then?
To talk about having quality at-bats, I think it's just showing quality at-bats. Whether you're getting hits or not, it's what you're doing. Are you bringing in a run, runner on third? Are you able to get guys over, have team at-bats? Are you able to, when you're putting the ball in play, are you hitting it hard? I guess those are the things. Are you getting on base? Are you just little things like that? I feel like if you do that, you know, day in, day out, at bat after at bat, you're not just giving at bats away. I feel like you could prove that you should be in there every day.
In Japan, one of the things about being in Japan is the focus on what you didn't do. you know, on I don't want to be really pejorative about it, but it's kind of a fault finding culture.
Yeah.
Now, how have you weathered that? Because obviously you got to focus on doing your thing and not be worrying about what other people think is a negative.
Yeah.
Too much, letting it throw you off your plan. So how have you dealt with that?
Really, it's just believing in yourself. Like, you can't let, you know, whether something negative happens, you can't let that get in your mind and just, that's not who you are,
right?
You know? So I think it's just more of a mindset, just knowing that, okay, maybe I messed up here, but I can still do something positive, sure. and that's what I can bring to the team. So just more of a mindset thing, and just always trying to stay positive, just keep pitch by pitch and just stay in the moment.
Yeah, I think the coaches and the players here, they all sympathize and they understand that, but it's kind of a default reset to the what did he do wrong
thing
that they can is how they're supposed to talk about everything.
It kind of does seem like that sometimes, just you know, they might find what you did wrong, but I mean, you know, I guess it's also something that you take and you try to learn from it. And so I guess, you know, there's two ways to look at it. You don't want to get caught up on it, but you want to learn from it.
Sure.
So
well, let me ask then, what have you learned from about anything from being in Japan? Because you played everywhere and done everything, and so until you got here, now you've added more to that resume.
I mean, I think it's just, it's really, I find that it's the little things. Make sure that you do the little things right. Like, you know, they practice very hard. When you do the little things wrong, it seems like it bothers them more than, you know, maybe if you do something great or like you have a big home run, but if you make a base running mistake, it seems like they might think about that more often.
Right.
So it's really just kind of getting back to the basics that you kind of just forget about. You learn it when you're little and then you just go out and play. But here it seems like they still try to focus on those little things and making sure that you're locked in, you know, situations and you're making all the smart plays.
So, okay. I'm going to ask a similar question. Looking back on your career, is there anything that you think, you know, this was something that sticks in your mind as being, you know, this is where I figured it out or I understood something? Or another thing was, well, I wish I had known that when I was 19 instead of when I was 28.
Yeah, I guess I think it might just be the passion for practice is the big thing. I mean, we come out and we work a lot, and I think, and I've, you know, you start to get used to it, and it's just kind of the way things are.
Right.
Where I find that maybe back home in the States, it seemed like you try to get your work in, but it's kind of like, hey, make sure you're ready for the game. But I think sometimes you could take that too far. Maybe not get as much work in as you need. You know, if everybody's different, so it's just, you know, I think maybe I could have just said, grabbed the coach and said, hey, let's do this, let's do that, maybe on my own, and really got my work in more. So.
Well, I wish you the best of luck this year.
Yeah, thank you.
Healthy season.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thanks, guys. Yeah, I have seen Adam Walker. I haven't talked to him except to wave and say hi. I have seen him a couple times since, and I haven't seen Machado, but what are your thoughts from those chats?
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to get him in. Like I think I had been telling people, we had some interviews stacked up here, so these that was part of that, and so it's good to get these guys in.
So basically I'm sort of like the leftovers.
Not you.
Yeah.
Not you.
I feel
not
like
about
it.
You.
Okay.
But
not
no.
About me. Jeez.
Well, wait a minute.
I just referenced Shinjo a few minutes ago. Come on. It should all be about me.
It's not about me. Wait a minute. Where's my agent?
Exactly. Okay. Please continue.
But yes, it's good to hear from these guys, and I'm glad we were able to get these interviews in. So with Machado, I think you hear the euphoric enthusiasm we often get from MPB newbies like that. The team is great. The coaches are great. The fans are great. The ball is great. The mounds are great. The stadium's great. Rainbows and ice cream with two cherries on top and all that stuff. I think we got a little bit of that at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I did like his mention of trying to get three outs, you know, get the outs on three or fewer pitches. I thought that was kind of interesting because I personally, I don't think that's a plan you can stick with in Japan unless you could really zip it by people all the time for sure. I think you have to get out, go out of the strike zone enough that guys here can wait on you. But, you know, he has been pitching well. He has had a successful first month plus here in Japan. So I'm not going to say that that's not a great plan, but I don't think the three or fewer pitches, that's not happening. Overall, I think he just sounds like a player who has gone through a lot and basically is ready to commit to whatever the team needs for success. I think as a young player, you kind of focus more on establishing yourself and getting noticed. And then that kind of transitions to being part of the system. And I think what we heard from a guy who has traveled and played in a couple of countries at least now, that it's time for him to be a cog and not try to think just about himself and think about how he can complement the other elements of the team and the other elements of the bullpen and where he can play a role and how he can contribute. And so I think that's what I noticed from his short chat. So what about you?
Well, I want to comment on what you said. I think that's really astute. And I think the shift is that he's, you know, when you're young, to put a further metaphor on that, you go from learning to or trying to want to be the machine to being a cog. and Japan, ironically, especially with hitters, tells you, no, we're all cogs here. You know, we're all pieces of the puzzle, and we don't, and this is the paradox with import hitters. We're all cogs here. We're just playing our little roles here. And then when you do that, they say, well, we expected you to be the machine because they expect power from the import hitters. So there's always that little thing going on. But some guys understand that that's not, the two things aren't mutually exclusive.
Right.
They just, and it's sometimes, you know, it's, I guess the common expression of that was Ernesto Mejia, who started as a machine and became a cog that they wanted to hang on to.
Right. Right. Became an important element to the team. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Whether he was playing or not.
Exactly. And that's the thing. So yeah, that is really interesting. And I got that same thing. And he, of course, we talked about the whole Pacific League. In fact, I think today's theme is the Pacific League dynamic, which people listening to the podcast are probably thinking, oh God, Jim, don't go down that road again.
Or yeah, what is that sucking noise you speak of, Mr. Gibson? So yes.
No, not that as much as the bit about what happens when you start playing in the Pacific League and they say, you know, guys are going to hit you, but don't let that stop you from throwing it, you know, throwing breaking balls in the middle of the zone, you know, to mess them up. Don't stop attacking the zone. Cause a lot of guys don't like to do, a lot of hitters, especially coming from the Central League, are a little surprised by that.
Yeah. Yeah. For some reason.
Yeah.
And in terms of Adam, if you're ready to go on,
go ahead.
I think the biggest moment in the interview for me was him pointing out that it's what you're doing, not whether or not you're getting hits. So we tend to focus on results. I think a lot of people, and I've said this on the show before, so I apologize for backtracking again for those longtime listeners. But, you know, whether you get hits or not is not important. The team doesn't look at that as much. Certainly the coaches and manager in particular, they want to see the ball go over the fence once in a while if you're a power hitter, but mostly they're just looking for you to be consistent in your approach and have a plan and execute that plan. And the results are not the biggest thing, but for observers, for people in the media, a lot of times for us watching, for fans, it's, you know, about did you get a hit? And the example I brought up years ago is, you know, a player can have a week in which maybe he goes three games without a hit, but over those 12 or so at bats, he hits a bunch of ropes, like six of them are line drives, but they happen to be at a fielder somewhere, at an outfielder, at an infielder. And the example I would bring up is an old one, but in 1988, the Dodgers are on their road to the World Series eventually. But I went up to San Francisco for a three-game series to watch the Dodgers and Giants play. And the Dodgers had a third baseman named Jeff Hamilton. And he wasn't a great hitter, but at the time he was having a really good stretch and he was hitting line drives. They were just, you know, he was hitting balls to the wall. He was hitting balls, you know, scorching balls to third base, blah, blah, blah. Well, I picked up the San Francisco Chronicles. I believe the Dodgers swept that series that I went to see. So I can't remember. I just remember there were a bunch of fights in the stands and they ended up putting up barriers. Remember the old stadium at Candlestick? They used to have a
I
huge
grew up there,
gap
man.
in the outfield. Yeah, in the outfield between the outfield seats and the fence where the home runs would
Sure.
go by, in left field. And the day after this game, they put up barriers to keep fans from running up to that left field fence in the outfield. I don't know if you remember that.
Was
Was it
this
in
what was
19,
this when they
1988?
put the those little sub stands in there? They had like a little tier of like a bleachers
Yeah, they did
in
have those
that.
bleachers in there, but those had been in there for a while, but they just put up
Okay.
barriers in front of the
Okay.
fence so people
Okay.
couldn't run up to the fence. It was that series. So anyway,
Okay.
I picked up the San Francisco Chronicle the next day because Jeff Hamilton hit a home run and the reporter described Hamilton as a light hitting third baseman. I'm like, this guy does not know what he's talking about. This dude has been hitting rockets and ropes all over the place, but they're just being caught. And I think it's that when you look at his batting average, if he's hitting 212 or whatever and doesn't have a lot of home runs, you think, okay, well, he's a light hitting guy and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not what's happening here. Balls, as Alonzo Powell told us on the show long ago, you can go up there as a hitter, do everything right, and still take that jog back to the dugout because the guys out there are positioned well, or the pitcher got the ball in a good enough location to keep you from doing exactly what you wanted, but you still had hit your line drive and you hit the ball hard, whatever, you know, 100 and something off the bat, miles per hour off the bat. So anyway, I just say let's look a little bit deeper, and I'm all with you, Adam Walker. Don't just look at the surface of the stats, that there's more to it. And like he said, the thing that the coaches look at is how you're producing, how you're making your outs, how you're approaching the at bats, and how the results are going to be what they are. Hopefully, if you get enough line drives, the coaches will say, well, you know what? Some of them are going to start to fall in, or you're going to have some luck, or, you know, the fielders won't be as good every day, and they're not going to make those plays against you. But we like what you're doing. We like how you're getting the bat on the ball, making a lot of contact. And blah, blah, blah. But we focus on the numbers. You know, did he get a double or not? Did he hit the ball through the infield or not? And with little regard sometimes of how you get to that process. So that's what I liked about it. What about you?
Yeah, I think the attitude is really good. That's not an issue. The issue is again what happens when you have the opportunities. And I think it was not a case of lack of effort. It has not been a case of lack of effort, but it has been a case of getting consistent results. And even, you know, although your Alonzo Powell, I do recall that story in which Alonzo Powell basically said he would have had more batting titles if his hard hit balls were not all at, a huge number of them were not at people. But that,
Yeah,
that's
that's
what he
part of
said.
it.
It is absolutely part of it. You know, there are guys who have empty batting averages because an absurd number of balls fall in, and guys who don't. But we're not. Now, we're not talking about career stuff, and Adam Walker's issue has not really been that. I mean, if you look at the hard hit ball percentage from Deltagraphs, which is a subjective measure, you know, somebody's looking at the stands and saying, okay, that's not, and that is, and you know, that's
Sure.
middle, that's soft, but there's 12 Hawks players with 50 plate appearances, and he ranks 11th in hard hit ball percentage. And the other guy, the guy below him, Akira Nakamura, is not playing a lot neither.
Mm.
So, gotcha. So I think that's more the thing. Yeah. At some point, the coaches have to defend, regardless what they think. Well, unless it's the manager, but whoever's putting you in the game has to defend putting you in the game at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But even, you know, it doesn't have to be the results, but of course for writers, I think you accurately pointed out we are basically, we need short bites. Now I try as a writer to be true, you know, and not pick things that are window dressing.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
Thank you. I appreciate your vote of sarcastic confidence there.
That's my snarkasm.
It is indeed. You're really good at it.
Thanks.
So you're welcome.
Practice.
Yeah, I recall. So anyway, the point being that we are required through our format to clutch at those straws, but that we also have to realize that what we write is not the same as reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a snip. It's just a snapshot that we're trying to give people. So yeah. So the easy stuff. And in Japan, the short answer, the example is when I was at the Yomiuri, I was told, don't write in the story how many runs the guy scored, because nobody cares. And it only matters whether you drive in runs, and if you drove in, you know, how many home runs you hit, how many hits you have, and how many runs you drive in, because nobody cares how many runs you score in Japan. And if you write a story, you have to write who drove in the winning run. Even if it was the Yoshihito Ishii climax series MVP RBI off the bench, a little flare over second base that made him the climax series MVP. And I'm going to say 2009. Goodness me.
Yeah, none of it matters.
It's like two little dying quails and in five at bats, and he's the MVP.
Hey, man. I talk about focusing on results, and of course, again, that's not a bad at bat, and it's not because
a bad at bat, and the result is fine.
Yeah, but you know, compare that to the other at bats in which guys really, you know, hit lasers and stroke the ball really hard and don't come away with a hit. So,
well, of course,
you want the result.
Yeah, sure. But my point is being, not only was it a good result, but it was the result that the Japanese media is trained to focus on.
Yeah,
as opposed to the, you know, they basically saying, forget the cake, we want the icing.
Yeah, well, nobody cares how far you hit the ball unless, if it's an out, unless there's a runner at third and fewer than two outs.
Or if you drive in five runs in a seven, you know, and if you drive in five runs and somebody else hits a ground ball in the 11th inning that drives in a run, and he's the hero.
Yep. Yep. So, all right. Let's move on here, make a seamless transition sort of, and talk about the standings. I'm ready. I give up. You know, I like to, not even I.
What's your normal? Well, let me ask, what's normal for you? At what point do you start actually caring?
2 months.
I know you look at them because it's reference material.
Sure.
Two months in. Okay.
So I'm maybe like a week to 10 days early.
Yeah, 10 days early. That sounds right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm not always certain about that, because I just know you have that line that drives me nuts.
I got that from Bobby Valentine. And I think I agree with him in that we don't know what we're looking at. We don't know what we have. I think the managers are still searching and looking. You can see that from some of the way the teams are using players and elevatoring a lot of players up and down in the rosters and trying to find a combination or a mix. And it's not all injury related. It's some performance related things. But anyway, I think in the Pacific League, let's start where I'm hearing that sucking noise. And it was I woke up this morning to see on Yahoo News that the Lions have I don't know if a lot of our international listeners know, but they have this thing called your being able to win a championship on your own power or via, your own
Right,
ability to win the
the
championship, the
GDQV.
GDQ show. And the Lions apparently have lost. They're going to need help to win a championship, a league championship, and they've lost that. It's called GDQU show, and they've lost their ability to win a championship already through 39 games, and that's a club worst. The previous worst was 41. So suffice to say, that team is having a struggle here early, and I'm not going to proclaim. It's still May, and I was just talking to last week. Claudio, and we want to thank Claudio again for sitting in for you. And he did an excellent job. That it's still May, but they're 13, the Lions are, they're 13 games under 500 as we sit here on Sunday morning. So they have a chance to make that 14 today if they lose. And things are just not looking very good for them. And their record is worse than the Chunichi Dragons, who are just as bad in terms of losing games, the way they lose games, they're not being able to score. But right above the Lions are the Oryx Buffaloes, and they're in fifth place right now in this Pacific League, and they're, as we sit here, 5 games under 500, and that's just a world of difference to me. 13 games under 500 versus five, and the Buffaloes are playing the Eagles, whom they beat yesterday, and have a chance to win today to go to only 4 games under 500. So that is concerning to me. Again, my magic number is 10 games under 500. When you get to that point, it's really, really difficult to come back and talk about winning a league title. Still, it's not even June yet, so things can get really serious in the once we get to June. But what's your opinion, or what's your impression of the standing so far? Since you say you like to look at the standings, what is your time
No,
table?
I don't like to look at the standings as much as I like to look and see it. Me, I like the relationship between the wins, runs scored, and runs allowed,
Okay.
and play with that. And it just really popped out at me. I'll get to that in a second. But of course, the obvious one was before I left. I mean, SoftBank is basically running away with the Pacific League. Every time you look up there, oh, I don't know what their longest, I think they've lost 3 in a row this year, but I'd have to search to be sure of that.
I think you're
They're
right.
just a machine, and their pitching has been the issue. It was the issue going into the season. I remember Hiroki Kokubo saying, "I'm at camp. I'm not even going to be with the hitters the whole thing. Nobody cares. They're going to score runs," which
Sure.
I thought was a little bit silly. Although they were a good offensive team, they weren't. They were a weird offensive team last year. They basically had a bunch of. They had five average guys. They had two MVP candidates, and then they had Taisei Makihara, who was the who came who didn't his season didn't start until like the end of April. And then he was like in a, he played like an MVP candidate for 3 months. And everything else was about the guys who weren't producing, but they still were a dominant offense in the Pacific League. So anyway, all that aside, I guess the big thing is the Nippon Ham Fighters actually scoring more runs than they've allowed this year, which is breathtaking.
Yeah, I think the last
Although,
time we pointed out the run differential, it was like they were two under, and then they had won a game and just eat their heads over the into the plus area, into the plus range. But now it's sufficient. It's 12.
yeah, well, they're one of the two teams in the Pacific League that are have score outscored their opponents. So, they are exactly where they deserve to be, which is trying not to be 10 games behind SoftBank as opposed to 20 games like the rest of the league. But I don't see otherwise, I don't see a lot of difference between, I guess the surprise is I don't see a lot of difference between 3, 4, and 5, Lotte, Rock 10, and Oryx. There's 5.5 games separating those three teams, but they're all more or less about the same quality. Oryx is interesting because it looked like this was going to be the year where they were going to get the big contribution from their imports. you know, last year they had offense, a little of offense from their imports, which was like they'd had a car for like 3 years and they finally took it to the car wash, knew what color it was.
And I was like,
because they'd had import.
What neighborhood
players.
Do you live?
I know.
What's going on, man?
Yeah, well, you know, they had Adam Jones, and you know, basically watching the season go by, in a sense of his numbers and his participation, he was always there, but he was sort of a ghost to himself. And as much as he was present and here, his numbers were really not.
Sure.
And, so, you know, getting that production seemed like, wow, Marwin Gonzalez, wow, Leandro Cedeno, wow. And they got new guys, wow. And now we're back to, can these guys hit? Although Cedeno has been staying in the lineup. But yeah, now Wurrichs is a question mark. It's like we're waiting for the engine to start running. It really hasn't.
It really hasn't. But I think that, and that's another reason to wait a little while on the team. But I think that we've seen just a lot of inconsistency in the rotation. And that's obvious and reflected in the quality start percentage at 51% as we sit here today. But I'm looking at Cebu and their quality start percentage, 66.6, best in Japan, you know, and right behind them is SoftBank. So SoftBank's getting, I mean, Jorge Arihara has been good, but hasn't been a shutdown ace kind of guy.
Nope.
Every time out. And yet they're getting really great starting pitching, I think. And the fact that they can score runs is why they're, you know, five games ahead of the Fighters right now.
Yeah,
the Fighters are good too.
And then you look at, I mean, Levon Moinella has been really good.
Yes.
And he's 2-1. I mean, he could easily be 4-1.
Or 5-0. Yeah, I guess he had the one game where
he gave up a few runs.
But even that game, that was like a Roki Sasaki situation where, wow, he gave up 3 runs, you know.
Exactly.
What's going on here?
No, correct. Wurrichs is, we expected the pitching to be stable. And it's like watching these young pitchers in NPB where you go, wow, he's got really good stuff, you know, and then you see it and, oh, he looks good. And then you see him 2 weeks later and you're going, geez, trying to do the same thing he did last time, but none of his pitches are any good. So it's sort of like most of the pitchers in the Pacific League, I think, are going through this. And it's sort of like mix and match and, you know, figure out the puzzle, go with the guys who work. SoftBank's sorting it out. Wurrichs, I don't know. It's puzzling. Wurrichs is puzzling me because Nakajima's like scratching his head. Are these the same guys who won 3 straight championships? You know, it's like we're seeing a little regression here. It's almost like Wurrichs is being visited by ghosts of Wurrichs' past or something. I mean, you know, they're like waking up in the middle. Yeah,
I mean, we
saw that before I went off to Hawaii with that Yoichi
Adachi big error game.
Yeah. I mean, the first error really wasn't an error.
Big error inning, I should say.
Three-error inning. And the first one was could easily have been a single. But after that, it was, you know, a Steve Sachs disease.
Hashtag high heat.
So, you know, that one is the yips is...
I understand. I'm happy that the Fighters are competing like they are. And I think they really had built up some momentum that seemed to stop when they went to Chiba and faced Ryoki Sasaki. And we'll get to that game shortly. Mm. But and then Lotte somehow came from behind yesterday to win that game 6-4. But the Fighters not getting great starting pitching, I guess about half the time they get a quality start, just a little more than half the time, and they're still
right. All these teams are, you know, they're throwing the guys out there, and you're going, wow, you know, Kazuo Ojima and Atsuki Taniichi, and wow, he was really bad today. I think that's the surprise. You know, this guy's a good, these are guys, most of the pitchers we're seeing on a daily basis are guys who, I don't know, half the time, okay, 3 days a week. The team will wheel out somebody you expect to see a good game from, mm-hmm. and you're going, wow, he really stunk up the joint. We're seeing a lot of that this year. And we say that in respect to the fact that the ball's really dead.
Yeah, you keep saying that. I'm still seeing balls fly out and fly a little bit more. I mean, the home runs might be down, but
runs might be down.
But I mean, I'm seeing some balls that maybe could be home runs, but I'm seeing some others that I'm like, how did that get out? So if the ball is really dead, I don't know. Maybe dead is too much of a, we need another adjective to describe it. Maybe it's not dead, but it's deadened.
Okay, I'll go with that. But yeah, the offensive levels are kind of 1950s level before Japan decided it was okay to hit home runs.
Yeah, okay. Well,
so no, it has been bad. And again, not all balls are the same and not all parks are the same. So we have seen that. So, but I don't know what the dynamic is that makes me, and I have no reason to think that this is any different from any other year, I guess, but this is perhaps my explanation of why you don't look at the standing, why one doesn't take stock in the standings in the first 2 months, because you really don't know what you're looking at. And here we come in with preconceptions about who's a good pitcher now. Mm-hmm. Who do we expect to be a good pitcher?
Yes.
And then the first 2 months tell us something different, and we get the puzzle, the puzzlement I'm now going through.
Yeah.
Is that people are not machines, and they do what they do, and you got to just got to live with that.
Excellent. All right, let's talk about the Central League a little bit here. Mm-hmm. And I guess the biggest surprise for a lot of people, and Claudio brought it up on the show last week, and I wanted to correct him. I'm like, the Giants in first place? No, they're not. And then,
well, they were, you know,
by percentage points, they were, and they basically are now. Because it's so close, but this has been a surprise to me, and I had picked this team to be in the playoffs just because I think I like the approach that they're going to play a lot of guys, and they're going to give guys opportunities, which they have been doing. But the manager is going to he's going to plan out every game, and he was meticulous as a player. I think his approach with his hitting showed that to me, that, you know, he just wasn't up there flailing away and he was able to change on the fly. It seemed he was able to say, you know, this is how they're pitching me. I think I'm going to change here mid at bat and do something else. And I think we're seeing that with the team. And another thing is that I really like his demeanor in the dugout. He's not Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, who's kind of stoical and not reacting to much good or bad. He does crack a smile sometimes when positive things are happening. He does react when negative things are happening, but basically he just seems like he's scheming and planning it, how to win, how to keep a lead, how to come back.
I think that's accurate. I think what we're really missing from the Giants dugout this year is that scowl of how come these players aren't good enough for me.
and yeah, there are some times where they're not good enough.
And they're not doing. But the manager's job isn't to blame the players.
Yeah,
sorry, Mr. Hara, but it's not your job.
Yeah, but when you see, I mean, what I've noticed is somebody does something that is correctable, or someone does something that is off plan or off schedule or what happens, and you see Abe take out his little notebook, that little, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's in the leather casing, and he takes out a little notebook and he makes a note, and he says, duly noted.
I'll give you the listeners a little aside here. Typically, that notebook is the purveyance, the prerogatory, the domain of the head coach. Typically, the manager is the guy who's looking impassive and, you know, looking like he's in charge of everything. He's the chairman of the board, and then the head coach is the guy who's frantically scribbling notes with a scowl and a look of disgust on his face every time something happens on the field.
Yes. Yeah.
So but Abe's doing that, which I do. I like that.
I like it too.
I like it. I like your observation, to be honest. I think that's really interesting.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad. I mean, I've been watching him, and, you know, as a player, I didn't really even get that much of an opportunity to talk to him. I think I talked to him once, one-on-one. And it just seems like he's like I am. I was that way playing basketball. I was always figuring out, okay, we need to do this. We need to adjust this. I was always thinking, I was always telling the other guys, hey, we need to do this. Watch out for that. You know, when we're playing defense, and I think he's the same way. So conversely, you've got the Dragons, and I hate bringing them up. And we had a listener whose comment I reported on the show last week, which you have not listened to yet. Ugh, Jim, going to get fired.
Because John's famously scribbling in his notebook. looking sternly at me as he says that. As gently as he can with a smile on his face.
Yeah, but you got the Dragons who, they're at a season worst, 5 games under .500, which still isn't bad. And like you said, I think you brought up the fact that the Central League, all the teams are basically in it. If some team, even the Dragons, wins 3 in a row, that could boost them up into one of the quote-unquote playoffs positions. Conversely, if one of the top teams loses 3 in a row, they could drop down to 3rd or 4th place. So everything's still bunched together and it's close and it's more of a race. But the Dragons are looking like, you know, they've lost 4 in a row again. And I think Tatsunami is actually talking about how he's not used the players maybe to their best abilities, and the fact that they don't have a power hitter, even though Seiya Hosokawa, I guess a couple of weeks ago, was the top home run hitter in the Central League for a moment. I think
which is saying something for
when he hit his
8th home run. Dragons leading the league is saying something.
Yeah, so I just think that they have a lot of problems out there. But the other teams, I think, like I said, the Giants to me are not necessarily overperforming, but they do look a little bit better than I expected. And I didn't expect them to be challenging even at this point for first place, but we're talking 3 games over .500. So that's why I'm looking at the standings, and I see them in second place, a game back here on Sunday morning of Hanshin, with a chance to maybe, if you know, things go right for them, be even tomorrow on Monday. But I don't think I'm believing that. I think Hiroshima can be better, and they just haven't been. And I don't know why. I think in DeNA, the case, that team, they're definitely missing Shota Imanaga. We can see that. But their starting pitching has been an issue. The bullpen has been an issue at times. And the Swallows, again, we talked about them earlier on. That rotation was a huge question mark for me going into the season. And they're below 50% quality starts. The only team worse in Japan is Rakuten at 46% of quality starts. So,
well, the Swallows pitching, and you know, the thing is, and I'll say this because I do, my default setting is I'll look at all the games and I'll slowly drift to see what the Swallows are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And is the bullpen has been really, really a wild ride. I mean, when they've got Taichi Ishikawa being their closer again, you know something's going on. Because this guy was the dog's breakfast for a couple of years. And
the dog turned his nose up.
pretty much. The dog
is all
was
we get
going,
here?
Exactly. Like dry food again.
Okay.
So Skippy, shut up and eat. Okay. But anyway, the Swallows and the bullpen, there's the two observations about the Swallows is obviously Kazuto Taguchi went through a stretch at the beginning of the season where he was not pitching a lot. And then they tried to, you know, he got out of his rhythm and things didn't work. And I don't know what to blame. He was not good.
Right.
He's consistently not good. And part of that may have been the fact that they were saving him for the clutch situations in which the Swallows didn't have any. They were either winning big or they were not in a situation. They were basically that when they won, they were winning big, and they were losing, they were behind by a run or two in the late innings. So the bullpen is an issue, particularly when you look at close games. I mean, I found this in the past in my research that one run records are influenced a lot by bullpens.
Sure.
But if the Swallows were 50-50 in one run games, they had a .500 winning percentage in one run games this year, they'd be 2 games ahead of the Tigers in first place.
Take that. So I get the importance. I understand.
Yeah, they'd be 23-14 instead of 17-20. So I'm not thinking the Swallows are bad, but I am thinking, they've been misfiring, and some of that may or may not be recoverable. I haven't done a projection yet, but we'll see. Usually I assume that their winning percentage going forward is going to be reflect how good they've been at scoring and allowing runs and preventing runs, in which case, since the season's still relatively early and they're now 4 games back of the Tigers, I could see the Swallows winning the pennant. I could see them, for example, more than the Carp. But we'll see. I think the Giants have had signs there, and I do like Abe. And the Tigers have been an interesting thing because, of course, they're doing what the Tigers are doing, which is leading the Central League in errors, which they tend to do. And I think part of that is just I think two things go into that factor. One is that they play on the dirt skin infield. The only one in Japan, really.
Sure.
The only main stadium with a dirt infield, and that's going to cause some of that. They play in a park which is notoriously windy, and they play for a team in which essentially they get the treatment of you can't make more errors. You know, they've constantly got that thing. How come the Tigers make errors? And sometimes it's a mental thing, you know. I'm not going to make an error on this play. I'm not going to make an error on this play. You know, it's the negative feedback loop. I think all those things contribute. When they win, nobody talks about the errors.
Yeah.
I don't think people are talking about them this year, but they are. There they are again, leading. Well, they're not leading NPB. That's Oryx's job this year.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we got to move along, but yeah, I am looking at the standings a little bit here, and that mean something a little bit in here. Early on, especially in the Pacific League. Let's go rocking with Roki, make a two-seam transition, and he was good on Friday night in Chiba, a rematch of the contest a week prior in which he threw in Hokkaido. Then Fukushima started for Nippon Ham last time, and this time out it was second-year righty Shoma Kanemura who got the nod for the Fighters, and he pitched really well against Sasaki. So Friday's game ended in a 12-inning, 1-1 deadlock. Sasaki went 8 innings, 3 hits allowed, an earned run, and it was good fortune for the Fighters because I think the ball that eventually the runner who eventually scored, the ball went off the glove of the shortstop, so it could have been an out.
Mm-hmm.
But the Fighters could only muster 3 hits. Like I said, they had a walk, there was a hit by pitch, and then Sasaki struck out 12 guys. He hit 162 on the gun, and that was his hardest pitch of the season. I don't like that it seemed like every player with any kind of speed was willing to steal on the Sasaki Tatsuhiro Kamura combination, but he meaning Sasaki, had 3 base or successful base dealers while he was on the mound, let's put it that way. And that was disturbing. But I read a story that says Sasaki went to the slider 13 times to start at bats on Friday.
Mm.
And he also threw a lot of splitters. So it's no surprise he racked up all those Ks, but he certainly could be better in the control department. And he was from his previous start. But the one inning in which he allowed a run, I think he kind of, again, threw the ball too close to the heart of the plate. But what did you see?
Well, I saw really... You know, as I tweeted, I think he made me feel 2 years younger because
sure, your wife was happy about that.
Well, you,
2 years.
Yeah, she wasn't the
Can
only
we go
one.
For 20?
No, but I was having it was a 2022 flashback Friday.
2022 flashback Friday. Okay.
And, it was a game very much in keeping with his top quality starts in 2022. Except the one thing that was different was that in 2022, he would throw 100 miles an hour, about a third of his fastballs would be 100 miles an hour.
Mm.
And this is, I think, where he and the Marines want to be, where they'll crank it up now and then, but he's got a cruise control setting, which is, I think he sat about 95, 90, 96.
Mm-hmm.
And then he cranked it up now and then, whether consciously or not. But, you know, he didn't run. He wasn't trying to throw as hard as he used to.
Okay.
But, and he threw, I think he'd thrown one curveball all year.
Oh, yes.
Before Friday's game. And I saw two, and I wasn't checking all his pitches. So I'd be surprised, but they were really good. And his curveball doesn't have to be really good. If he's throwing five of them and throwing them for strikes, they're all going to be strikes because nobody's looking for it.
Right. That's the one, the pitch that people say, get that out of your arsenal. I don't think about it. I'm not looking for it.
Yeah,
I don't want to see it. Don't bring it to the ballpark.
Yeah, you know, unless you're charmed, if you go up to the plate looking for Roki Sasaki's curveball, you might go 0 for 20 against him.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing was, I guess the results part was he struck out. I noticed his first five strikeouts were on three pitches. And he finished the game with 12 strikeouts, and seven of them were on three pitches.
Wow.
Now, I actually could know how rare that is in Japan, but I haven't gotten around to digging through the data yet. But I did look in MLB, and I found out that since 2016, only one MLB pitcher there's only been one game with more than seven, and that was Max Scherzer, who's kind of like the three-strike punch-out guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done that a few times. He's done seven or more, but seven is other than the one Scherzer game in 2016 or 2019, in which he got nine. But yeah, that was remarkable. So it was really a good story, I think, for Roki Sasaki moving forward. But the Marines offense is really, I don't know. They're basically, I'll be honest, basically we've got the Tigers' offense is good. The Swallows' offense is pretty good. The Hawks' offense is really good. And everybody else is kind of lame.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, they're like the other guys, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was an impressive outing for him just because the Fighters came in kind of hot and he cooled them off a little bit. And then, like I said, the Marines were able to win on Saturday, so that's good for them in terms of maybe not sinking further down in the standings. But let's again make a one-seam transition and talk about Munetaka Murakami on Tuesday in a 2-0 victory over the Hiroshima Carb. At 24 years and 3 months, he became the youngest hitter, or slugger, if you want to say, to reach the 200 home run milestone, and he broke that mark. I don't know that it's a record, but I guess it is, because it's his now. He broke the mark of Kazuhiro Kiyohara as the youngest to reach that milestone, and Kiyohara was 24 years. I saw a report that said Kiyohara was 25, and I said, wait a second, why are we not getting more detail? And I kept looking in on the Japanese articles, and I found one that said Kiyohara was 24 years and 10 months when he reached that milestone.
Right, he was born in the middle of the year. So,
yeah. So, in this game, Murakami really kind of ended up stealing the spotlight from rookie right-hander Kengo Matsumoto, who, a first-year rookie, throws a shutout in his debut, which was pretty awesome. But like I said, Murakami grabbed the spotlight and just ran away with it. And, you know, I just love what this kid has done, Murakami, in his career. And I remember talking, and I always bring it up because in my mind, these two guys will be linked for a long time in their careers until Murakami moves on to the major leagues and Koji Chikamoto of the Tigers stays here. But I just remember the rookie seasons, and I said, these two guys are really good. It's hard to pick which one is the real rookie of the year, but I liked Chikamoto, but I will go on to say that I said it at the time, I think Murakami is going to have the more impactful career and he's really going to be a great player. But if you look at the things that Shohei Ohtani did as a young player, and I remember on the show, you said what Ohtani was doing offensively was on par with Hall of Famers in NPB history.
Yes.
So where is Murakami's place as a hitter now that he has reached this mark?
That's a good question. Well, let me tell you, actually, I just did find the date. Before the show, I was telling John that I feel over jet lag. It's just like, it's making me slightly more forgetful than usual, which makes me more forgetful than 99% of the people in the world.
Good grief.
I know.
What's your name?
don't tease me, because
no,
I might
test.
Not, I don't
know.
You
didn't
know
say there was going to be a test.
Exactly. So the thing is that basically Kazuhiro Kiyohara was the leader in home runs, but very early on, you know, actually the youngest home run leader was pitcher Masaichi Kaneda, because I think he hit one, he was 16. But he was he led the league. He has the record for most home runs at sort of at any age, but Murakami has been blowing past him. And then the next obstacle is going to be Sadaharu Oh. Because Sadaharu Oh, when he was 24, had that 55 home run season, and he then started to blow past Kiyohara. So right now they're at an age, they're all, if we look at them as 24-year-olds, he's got 201. And as I said, flashback, 2022 flashback Friday, because not only because of Roki Sasaki, but because Koyo Aoyagi threw a breaking ball below the strike zone, and Murakami put it out in right center field at Koshien, which is actually the deepest part of the park. Mm-hmm. The power alleys is deeper than dead center.
Mm-hmm.
just a remarkable home run. So that was interesting. Okay, 24-year-olds, Kiyohara still has the record at 222, and second now is Murakami is still ahead of Sadaharu Oh, but it's going to be interesting the next year and a half. So we'll see.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. So we got this question from our buddy Dave in Baltimore, who is now Dave in Japan.
He is indeed the NPB card guy in Japan.
Yeah, he's trekking around and watching baseball games. And the poor guy, he had to go to Nagoya the other day, or he scheduled himself to go to Nagoya to watch a farm game that got rained out. And then luckily he didn't pay money and go to the stadium to watch the Dragons blow up a game and play really poorly against Hanshin. I should credit Hanshin.
I'll tell you, on the plane coming from Hawaii, I heard a guy going, I'm going to see a game in Nagoya. And I'm going,
hide your eyes.
Hashtag
indeed. Keep the mask, Hawaiian Airlines, Geese.
Yeah, you think you're going to see a game. You're not going to see very much. Anyway, Dave says, got another question for you guys. I've been listening to you guys talk about some of the changes in how MPB teams recruit foreign players these days. And I wondered about one thing that could be affecting the pool of players willing to come to Japan. In the old days, you'd get guys who were finishing up their careers coming to Japan, and you don't get that much anymore. I know some of the reason it doesn't is that teams are looking for a different kind of player, but it does still happen. Adam Jones comes to mind. What I'm wondering is if a lot of guys like Adam Jones are opting to play in the independent leagues in the U.S. instead, an option that wasn't available in the 1980s. I can see two benefits for the player. You don't have to go to a different country, and if you play well, you might get picked up by an MLB team for their stretch drive. Play well in Japan, and you're going to stay in Japan all season. So after all that, I guess the TLDR version of my question is, do you guys think the existence of the independent minor leagues in the U.S. has affected the pool of players willing to come to Japan? Thanks, Dave.
Jim. Go on.
Okay, you beat me.
You dirty dog.
You beat me to it. All right, I'll go. Personally, I don't think that would sway anyone's plans. I think by your own accounts in your preamble, I think the status of playing in Japan has spiked since you're not getting guys who are at the end of their careers. So it's better than indie league ball. It's more competitive here in MPB, and mostly it's probably more structured. So what you're seeing is what we're seeing with the pitching, the talent is on a level that's higher in Japan than it is in indie ball. So just because you put up numbers as a batter versus pitchers who aren't likely to be highly valued in indie ball, and vice versa, pitchers you come to Japan and face pitchers who are valued higher than indie ball pitchers, and you put up some numbers, I think you have a opportunity to get picked up by a major league team. I think what you're saying, Dave, does go for stretch drive, because no one's going to leave an NPB team, I don't think, in the middle of a season or at July, August on, if they're putting up numbers. They're not going to leave Japan to go back to the States to a team for a stretch drive. So I think that's out. So in that sense, I think you're correct. But if a player has a good season and doesn't have a contract or has contract options, or in the case of one player whose name shall remain anonymous, he had offers while he was playing down the stretch drive in Japan, but his offers were for the following season in the major leagues, and he turned that down to stay in Japan because he didn't. Well, we won't get into the why, because I think that'll give away who it is. But anyway, so I think that does happen, but I don't think people are going to leave in the second half. So I think you're right for that. So, you know, I think our guest this week on the show is a shining example. Adam Walker was a two-time MVP in indie ball.
He was a triple crown winner.
And he got a deal in Japan for an opportunity, not even a guaranteed gig, but, you know, maybe a chance to play every day. And I think he's a testament to how MVP or MLB teams view Indy League success. You can do a lot in Indy League, but we're looking at specific things. And if we don't see those specific things and get those that kind of data or those kind of metrics, we're not going to offer you a spot. So I still think Japan is a more viable transition spot to Major League Baseball than the Indie League situation. Jim?
Yeah, interesting. I think the dynamic that Dave, first of all, thank you for the comment and all the kind words and support, is basically where the player's goal of being this year is. You know, as you said, if you're in indie ball, there's two dynamics. There's indie ball in America. I mean, we did have a case of Craig Brazell, but Craig Brazell played indie league. You know, he was 2008. He was with the Cebu Lions. He was hurt. The Lions dumped him. He was playing in indie ball. And then 2009 and then 2010, he was back with the Hanshin Tigers. In the last and got a huge contract the last year, the Lively Ball. So well done, Craig. But if your goal is to be an MLB, American Indie Ball this year, American Indie Ball is vastly closer. Whereas if your goal is to be an NPB this year, Japanese Indie Ball is much closer, because, you know, guys like now, Japanese Indie Ball is populated with guys who want to play in NPB. But the effect you described definitely has had an effect. There are guys who don't see Japan as an option. But once they do, once players who are, you know, if they're former MLB guys, I don't think they're really looking at Japan as an option if they want to stay in the States. But for a lot of imports who think, you know, playing an indie ball in Japan and playing an indie ball in America is no difference, and I've got a better chance of staying, you know, getting a good contract in Japan, then Japanese indie ball is the answer. So the answer is yes, it's an influence, but I think Japanese indie ball is a big influence now, because Japanese teams every year sign somebody from the independent leagues, either an import or a Japanese guy. Although the Japanese guys have to usually go through the draft unless they're former NPB guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I would imagine if I were in the States and playing baseball and had the opportunity to come to Japan and play and get a regular gig, I would take that over playing indie ball.
Sure. Sure, it so much has to do with context, because I think there will be, you listen to what your agent and the scouts tell you.
Sure.
Right. If the scouts say, you know, if you're throwing your curveball for strikes, we can use you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get that feedback, you're going to stick it out in the U.S. Whereas if you've got Japanese scouts saying, you know, we could use you this year, well, geez, where am I going to go? You know, a lot has to do with the individual aspirations. So sure. Guys who don't see Japan as an option, are going to stick in the States, and guys who, as you said, who understand that Japanese baseball is hard and has is the other back door to MLB, probably are going to say, I'm going to go take a job with the Japanese team if they're going to give me a contract.
Yeah. I'd rather.
Yeah. Know. The dynamic has completely changed from, as we've talked about a lot this year, has dramatically changed since the 1980s.
Yeah. So the context and the situation is, I think, are going to be what the player or specific players look at when they make that decision.
Yeah.
But I think in general, I wouldn't say it's impacting. I mean, I wouldn't say it's impacting as much as one might think.
No, because the guys we're talking about are guys who are really not.
The profile of those players, yeah, is
not really great. I mean, they're guys who are marginal players either way.
Exactly.
At that age, because we're talking about older players, and in this case, and the younger players, you know, that's an interesting dynamic too. But yeah, the whole relationship between Japan and MLB has dramatically shifted in the last 40 years.
Okay. All right, Dave, enjoy your trip, and hopefully we will catch up with you before we record the next show. So thank you very much for the question. I always appreciate you listening. We got a couple of guys on deck, Niels in Germany and Roku Dan. I'm not sure if it's, I'm sorry, Rock Dan.
Rock Dan.
Roke Dan, but he's on deck. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Go to the Facebook page, leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes, and while it lasts, until they rip our podcast from their cold dead fingers, I don't know. We're on Google Podcasts as well. Thank you very much for listening. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.